Case number 09-3053, United States of America versus Darrell A. Goodwin, also known as Goody, appellant. Ms. Dyer for the appellant, Ms. Heffernan for the appellee.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Beverly Dyer on behalf of Darrell Goodwin, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Goodwin challenges his trial attorney's failure to introduce sufficient evidence at sentencing to support a reverse sting downward departure. The district court's ruling that counsel made a strategic decision not to introduce that evidence is wrong because it is never reasonable as a strategic matter to fail to introduce sufficient evidence. At trial, a defense counsel...
What do you think about the government's argument that since Goodwin was sentenced as a career criminal, drug quantity really played no role in the length of his sentence, and so there's no need for a departure? In other words, even if he had raised it in the district court would not have departed, so there's no prejudice.
Well, there are several reasons why I don't think that that argument...
But you agree, right, that it didn't affect his sentence, isn't it? You seem to concede that in your brief.
I don't agree that because Mr. Goodwin did not, because this wasn't raised below or on direct appeal, Mr. Goodwin did not make an attempt to demonstrate
It wasn't raised in the district court?
No, it was not raised in the district court.
I know it wasn't raised on the direct appeal.
It wasn't raised at sentencing either. So the district court has not actually ruled on this issue or mentioned...
Okay, well, set that aside.
You disagree
with the government that because of the career offender sentencing that drug quantity didn't affect his sentence.
There could be circumstances under which we might be able to show at an evidentiary hearing that he only had the available resources to buy less than 500 grams
right.
at market rates because the
he was sentenced under the career criminal provision, right?
So but the career
what difference would it have made?
That would have made a difference if it were under 500 grams of cocaine, over 500 grams, because that would have changed the statutory provision that, or it would have changed.
It still would have been trumped by the career criminal provision.
He has the problem that he pled guilty to possessing with intent to distribute.
Right, but that
grams.
We can't change. I mean, that's
not going to change.
That's not going to change. So
that's correct.
He pled. And so I still don't see how the length of the sentence was affected by the quantity here.
The departure is not governed by the quantity. So that under the plain language of the guidelines, the note 14 does not refer to drug quantity with respect to the extent to which the district court is authorized to depart.
No, you're right about that. But the purpose of this is to protect defendants who, in fact, get longer sentences because of the way the government handled the sting, right?
I understand that.
It's not like the exclusionary rule here.
The court should draw from that is that the district court had discretion not to apply the departure, which the court would have had discretion not to do in any event.
Uh-huh.
The question we raised, and we have been raising consistently, is whether Goodwin is eligible for the departure. The guidelines don't preclude that eligibility, and I don't think would prevent the district court from departing even from the career offender guidelines. Under the plain language of the guidelines, in addition, Mr. Goodwin raised several arguments, and the cumulative effect of those arguments could have led the court to depart from the career offender uh-huh. guidelines. So I think we have several reasons why. First of all, we have never argued that the court was required to depart, and the court has never addressed that question. The district court has never indicated that it would not depart if, in fact, Mr. Goodwin was eligible for the departure. I don't think that the career offender guidelines make him ineligible, is what our position is. And the district court has never suggested that it would not depart either because of the career offender guidelines or for any other reason. So,
well, what would be the basis for departure? Why would the court depart in a situation like this? I agree with you, it's discretionary, but why would it do it?
A court could depart in order to send a message to the government that these stings need to be fair. So that is one reason. The court could depart because...
Of course, the courts can do that in routine reverse sting cases where, in fact, drug quantity does affect the sentence.
Well, I don't know that the court... this is a recognized and encouraged factor for departure
right.
under the guidelines. So I don't uh-huh. know that that would take a case out of the heartland of cases in the context where there was no... where the circumstances of a reverse sting did not present a basis for departure. So I think our position is that, yes, a court might decide not to depart, but that a court is not prohibited from departing based on the career offender guidelines. The reasons could be, I understand that it wouldn't correct the drug quantity change, and we recognize that, but the district court could still decide that the sting justified something of a departure, even from the career offender guidelines. I do think that the cumulative weight of the arguments could have supported a departure, particularly here where we have Mr. Goodwin submitted an affidavit from Myron Smith, a retired police officer with a lot of experience testifying as an expert witness in drug cases, in training in drug cases, and other experience, that the district court should have held an evidentiary hearing. Based on Smith's affidavit, the record and materials of the case did not conclusively show that Mr. Goodwin could not demonstrate that his counsel was deficient for failing to introduce sufficient evidence. On the issue of whether it was a strategic decision not to do so, I'd like to point out the difference between trial and sentencing and defense counsel's role in those two proceedings. At trial, where the defense counsel is defending against the government's burden of proof, most decisions as to how best to defend do involve strategic decisions. At sentencing, where the defendant is advocating for a lower sentence, the defendant usually bears the burden of proof, and in that context, it is always deficient not to meet that burden if, in fact, available evidence exists to support the burden and the showing that the defendant is required to make. So here, I think that the district court erred in ruling that that the decision had a strategic component and that it was Smith's affidavit or information would have been cumulative.
I want to back you up to something, see if I misunderstood you. Did you say the district court had not ruled that he was not likely to depart in any event when Judge Taylor was asking you about
it? It has ruled that there's no reasonable probability that Mr. Goodwin would obtain a lower sentence based on the medical condition departure requests. But with respect to the reverse sting departure, I don't recall any indication from the district court that it would, if Mr. Goodwin were eligible for the reverse sting departure, that the court would not apply it.
On the medical issue, the pre-sentence report and the sentencing transcript, they refer to, I want to ask you about the nature of his infirmity, of his medical problems.
Yes.
Sinus blockage and migraine headaches that are so severe to the point that he would ball up in a knot. Is that the extent of the record on?
He also, in his allocution, described similar type of pain, including one occasion where it happened at the probation office and he had to be taken away in an ambulance.
Right, but it's all related to the migraines and the sinus problem.
Yes, and in his affidavit, which is attached to our reply, he said that the headaches began shortly after the burns, or in the context of not long after the burns, and that we suggest that demonstrates that the headaches are also the result of the burns and his chronic pain condition, and that the burns that he suffered led to this chronic pain syndrome that he had.
And the district court considered all of this, right? He was aware of the medical conditions. He said that, I think it was Judge Hogan, he said that he understood the problems that burn victims can become drug addicted and all this. And then he said, but that's just, in this case, that's outweighed by his criminal behavior.
That's correct.
Right. So the question here is, is there any reason to think that the judge would react differently now? In other words, where's the prejudice, since already considered it?
The district court said that Goodwin had a history of drug sales for some time, and that argument that his pain drove him to drug addiction had to be balanced against this history of selling drugs. But that response may have helped or assisted the court in arriving at a sentence at the low end of the guideline range, but the court did not have any mention of any authority for going down below that. And it also suggested that the courts did not view Goodwin's allocation to have mitigated his offense, but it did not reject a departure request where none was made. The district court did not, the district court mentioned that response in connection with the lesser harms argument and not in connection with the physical impairment argument, first of all. Right. In terms of whether
back to that subject in the proceeding before us today, and he said he would not have, it was not a likelihood of departure on that basis in his memorandum of opinion that we're reviewing now.
He said with respect to the lesser harms that he felt that he had effectively rejected that ruling. But he also ruled on the basis of no reasonable probability of a lower sentence. Right. And he did not mention the response in connection with the physical impairment argument. So the physical impairment argument, I don't know that that applied to. But in addition, the court did not consider whether Goodwin perceived his pain to be a greater harm than the offense that he was committing. And that's the question that the 5K2.11 discusses. So the question is, did he perceive that to
We've
be less harm?
We've kept you up beyond the allotted time, so unless my colleagues have further questions, we will give you back a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Chief Judge.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, Patricia Heffernan on behalf of the United States. Starting with the reverse Sting departure, I wanted to point out that the government did make the argument in the district court 2255 litigation that the departure was inapplicable because of the fact that Goodwin had been sentenced as a career offender.
The government didn't make it on the direct appeal, did it?
That's right. We neglected to point out to the court that that was a different way that the conviction could be affirmed. That's correct.
So what's your reaction to Ms. Dyer's point that, you know, look, we just don't know what the district court would do. It might decide to depart, even though the sentence was not affected by the drug quantity.
Well, first of all, I would point out.
Is it your position that the district court doesn't have the authority to depart?
We don't think the district court had the authority to depart.
Is there any case that says that?
I have not found any cases going,
going
either way. I've never found I haven't found no cases where the argument has been made that the reversing, departure should be imported to the career offender guideline. But I do think that the cases that we cite regarding Kimbrough and the authority to depart based on the disparity between the crack and powder cocaine guidelines is very helpful to the court in its analysis, because the underlying principle in those cases is that where drug quantity doesn't drive the sentence, what the authority to depart is irrelevant when you're sentenced under the career offender guideline. And as we pointed out in our brief, appellant has never argued that even assuming that there was some kind of sentencing manipulation going on here, appellant has never argued that that manipulation put him below the 500 grams which drove his sentence. That was what drove the statutory maximum under the career offender guideline. Also, appellant is arguing for the first time here at oral argument that the purpose that the court should have awarded the departure was to punish the government. That is an argument that has never been raised, wasn't raised in the district court, and shouldn't be considered here. There's also no authority, as far as I'm aware, to grant that departure on that basis. The departure comes under the drug quantity guideline. It's clear in the language of the departure that the purpose is to correct the quantity calculation. And for those reasons, the departure on the facts of this case would have been entirely inapplicable and unauthorized. Unless the court has any questions with respect to the physical harms and medical-related issues, the government would rest on its brief with respect to those issues.
Any further questions?
For the questions, we'd ask that the judgment, that the order be affirmed. Thank you.
Hearing none, okay, you'll give you back a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just point out that in its 2255 ruling, the district court did recognize that Goodwin was a career offender, but did not address the argument that the government made in that proceeding, that the career offender's guidelines trumped the Note 14 departure. And with respect to I would rest then on our papers as well. Thank you, Your Honor, unless there are further questions.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted.